The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I am Avra Lewis with the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine. The first article is titled, Men in the Mirror. These founders are changing the face of entrepreneurship, starting with themselves. Providing access and opportunities for Black business owners is more critical than ever. The New Voices Foundation, a sister company of Essence Ventures, remains committed to decreasing the many resource gaps for entrepreneurs of color. Here, we highlight three members of our New Voices family who are paving the way for the next generation. Sanj LaRon Squire. LaRon, 38, thought finishing law school and entering the workforce was the dream, until he and his now business partner, Dave Solvant, realized they wanted more. We wanted to do something impactful and meaningful with our lives outside of working for big corporations and big companies, says the New York-based entrepreneur. They came up with the idea for Squire, a business management system for barbershop owners. The app provides a digital safe space that helps both newer and more established entrepreneurs develop and expand their businesses with the necessary tools to streamline operations. Daishan Imara, Maven. The Oakland-based 42-year-old co-founder created Maven in 2013 to meet a need he identified in the salon business. My older sister is a stylist, and she wanted to sell the hair extensions she used daily, he says. Amira's ultimate goal is to reshape salon retail distribution culture. With a professional background in international trade, logistics, and supply chain management, he helps solve behind-the-scenes challenges of Black hair business founders. Maven is an offline to online retail solution, providing web and mobile point-of-sale applications that allow salons and stylists to sell products without the need to buy or hold inventory. Eric Taylor, Trident. Taylor, 34, is the founder, CEO, and CIO of Trident, a private equity firm focused on acquiring U.S.-based small businesses in industrial, consumer, and healthcare sectors. Growing up in Texas, he saw the effects of financial disparities in his family and wanted to make a difference for aspiring Black and brown entrepreneurs. The revolution must be funded, says Taylor, who now lives in New York. I think my part is creating access to capital, financial literacy, and opportunity for people who never would have been given a look otherwise. Trident uses technology to systematically reduce the racial wealth gap by incorporating diversity, equity, and inclusion considerations to facilitate successful commercial outcomes. The next article is titled Brush Strokes and Boom Boxes. As hip-hop turns 50, curators at the Baltimore Museum of Art look back at the genre's visual identity. For decades, hip-hop was snubbed by folks who refused to consider it high art. Now curators are clamoring to tell its stories. In 2021, Contemporary Arts Museum Houston showcased DJ Screw's legendary signature sound with the exhibit Slowed and Throwed, Records of the City Through Mutated Lenses. And in 2022, The Brooklyn Museum amplified the late Virgil Abloh's hip-hop-inspired work as a designer and visionary artist with the mixed-media installation Figures of Speech. Now, the Baltimore Museum of Art is celebrating the maturation of the music genre with the culture, hip-hop, and contemporary art in the 21st century. Whenever an art form reaches this point in age, there's this desire to canonize it, says Gam E. N. Gilliatt, who co-curated the Baltimore exhibition with Asma Naim. Hip-hop is old enough to have its own set of references, and it's a really beautiful moment for really taking stock of what that means for a genre that is about constant evolution. The Culture, which opened on April 5th, features paintings, drawings, photography, sculptures, videos, and installations tracking hip-hop's progression since its beginnings in the South Bronx in 1973. More than 90 works from artists such as Julie, Monica, and Carrie illustrate the music form's journey from rebellious siblings to pop culture dominator. A soundscape from Baltimore-based artists Wendell and Abdu adds context to the experience as attendees listen to an audio collage inspired by the exhibition's themes. This is a show that you should be able to move your body in, adds Gamian. It actually has a soundtrack to it. It's also one that examines both the admiration and the tension between rappers and the visual artists they name drop on tracks, including Abloh. There's this absolute canon of Western art history. Then there's this alternate canon that hip-hop has created. And it's in conversation with that traditional canon, even as it's pushing against it. One of the ways that the conversation around hip-hop and contemporary art takes place is that these things are in some way diametrically opposed to each other. But if you look at the history of hip-hop, fine arts always has been there. There's always been this conversation between the street and the gallery. Notable fashion moments from Dapper Dan to Louis Vuitton's newest men's creative director, Pharrell Williams, are included in those conversations, alongside the images of an Azalea tracksuit from the Telfar Clemens, Little Kim's iconic turquoise Chanel bang, and Jordan Castile's 2018 painting. It was very important for us to really think about fashion as an art form unto itself. Fashion has had a tremendous impact on contemporary artistic practice. Gilliatt sees including wearable art as a leveling of hierarchies and notes its opportunity to expand the mindset of museum goers. Her ultimate hope, she says, is that audiences walk away with a different kind of appreciation for both hip-hop and contemporary art and their interplay. The Culture, Hip-Hop, and Contemporary Art in the 21st Century will be on display through July 16, 2023. The next article is titled, Home Ownership Can Build Wealth for Generations to Come. For too long, many people have been denied access to home ownership simply because of their race. This has hurt family after family for generations. Discrimination because of one's race, color, or national origin is against the law. If you believe you have experienced a violation of your fair housing rights, file a complaint with HUD. Act today. Your future generations will thank you. Everyone has a right to fair housing. Don't let housing discrimination stop you. The next article is titled, What My Dad, Malcolm X, Taught Me. The daughter of the human rights leader reflects on the man behind the public image. Today, I am older than my father, Malcolm X, ever was. For the rest of my life, I will be older than my father ever had the opportunity to be, living the experiences age brings that he never had the chance to enjoy. As I look back on my life, I see how profoundly different it has been from his. The America in which he lived for a mere 39 years until his death in 1965 is one that I cannot ever truly understand. Despite having spent my life thinking, writing, speaking about it, during my father's lifetime, daily life for Black Americans was far more brutal and unjust than it is today. I went to prep school, I rode horses, I travel freely, I've lived in an America and a world forever altered by my father. Many images the public saw of Malcolm X were of him responding to heinous acts, bombings, murders, fires, attack dogs. He metabolized and articulated the grief and anger of Black Americans facing harsh discrimination, violence, terror in their own country. The media portrayed him as an aggressive, provocative leader. If he was provocative, it was because he was pointing out harrowing realities that America at large was too fearful or unwilling to confront. Certainly that was going to be provocative. But my father wasn't led by anger. He was filled with faith, love, and compassion. And on a day-to-day basis, he didn't speak in the same manner in which he spoke to a crowd. That wasn't the Malcolm my family and I knew. The man we knew was warm, gentle, empathetic, with a famously electric smile. He was a family man. I remember his great sense of humor and that he loved jazz music, literature, and possibility. He studied history, nature, and the arts. He had a butterfly collection. He read poetry to his wife. He was a bright intellect, influenced by his upbringing. His parents, Reverend Earl and Louise Little, were members of Marcus Garvey's Universal Negro Improvement Association, which commanded millions of followers worldwide in the 1920s. Just as his parents had passed down their values to Malcolm, he did the same with my sisters and me. My father's faith enabled him to believe in the resilience of the human spirit. He taught us that self-love, one that comes from an education in history based on facts, is crucial and allows us to love others in turn. We believed in the oneness of God and hence the oneness of humanity, and never relied on others to determine our self-worth. Committing harm against another is essentially the same as committing harm against ourselves. Malcolm brought human rights into the civil rights movement, and that is a legacy we can see clearly in the contemporary language and ideology of activism. Recently, while reflecting on my own Hajj, I reread the letter that my father wrote while on his. It moved me to tears. Never have I been so highly honored, my father writes in the letter, and never has such honor and respect made me feel more humble and unworthy. Who would believe that such blessings could be heaped upon an American Negro? It made me weep to read both his reality as a Negro and his elation at being granted deference and peace outside of the perverse racism of America. While on his Hajj for the first time in his life, Malcolm stood equal with all men to share the dignity and respect as well as the rights and privileges of first-class citizenship. He knew that upon his return to America, there would be danger waiting for him. But he returned anyway because he believed in his mission to insist America live up to her promise of liberty and justice for all. To the public, the letter functions as a historical document written by a great human rights advocate, a brilliant thinker, and a political strategist. But it is also the heartfelt thoughts of a young man on a spiritual journey having profound personal experiences as he circled the globe searching for solutions to the human condition. He was received as a worthy peer by kings, presidents, prime ministers, and potentates alike. He met with African heads of state to internationalize the plight of African Americans. World leaders listened to his ideas for ending the atrocities caused by war and unequal distribution of the world's wealth. My favorite speech that my father ever gave took place at the Oxford Union debate in 1964. It was within a year of his assassination. One reason the speech has always appealed to me is that it was not a response to a particular brutal act. Often his news bites were a reaction and a broadcast without context. But in this debate, he focused on building a better world. When I was younger, I would watch and rewatch the recording. In the video, my father stands before a crowd of students and faculty. He is tall, distinguished, dapper, and handsome. His face flighting in turns between a wry grin and a gentle, somber stoicism. He is surrounded by engaged young scholars who are attentive, cheering, applauding, learning. As with the letter Malcolm wrote from the Hajj, I love this speech because it shows my father for who he really was. As a young girl, I envisioned that it was the kind of conversation he would have had with me as I got older. Had he still been with us, he would have appealed to my humanity as he does in this debate. He would have encouraged my sisters and me to love and to be our best selves. He would have wanted me to help make a difference, to be a voice for those who can't speak for themselves. Now, decades after his death, my dad is still waiting for the justice he deserves, not just as the leader of a movement, but as a citizen and a human. History has made my father into an icon, but he was also just a man. A young man who knowingly put his life on the line because, above all, he believed in justice, and he believed until his last breath in our capacity to love. The next article is titled, Getaway Game Plan. Hambrick and Rooks offer tips on how to pull off an affordable, fun trip with your kids. First, be flexible. Hambrick notes that flexibility helps you save money. All of our travel is based on flight deals. Let deals dictate where you go. Secondly, visit places where the U.S. dollar goes far. It's strong in Southeast Asia and places in Central and South America, so your expenses won't be as high, says Hambrick. You can find affordable food and accommodations. Thirdly, start small. Hambrick cautions that not everyone's ready for a 12-hour flight with their kid. If you are nervous, start with a day trip or a weekend getaway to help you build up your travel confidence. Fourth, if a destination is not kid-friendly, make it so. We always try to go to a park or somewhere where my kids can meet other kids, Rook says. My kids have actually made friends around the world. Number five, do like the locals do. We eat the food, opt for homestays and Airbnbs versus hotels, and really submerge ourselves in the local way of living, Rook says. Number six, do motherhood without limits. Don't allow other people's fears or opinions to stop you from going, Rook urges. You make your own rules. Go! The next article is titled, Mamas on the Move. Two fabulous, fearless, limitless women committed to seeing the world are making global travel a family affair. Black mothers travel. We go consistently, locally and globally, solo or with our partners or with our girls. But over the past several years, it's families that have led a new wave for Black travelers, and moms are at the helm of that movement. Not only are we going, but we're bringing our beautiful brown babies on these cross-continental journeys with us, documenting our experiences so that more Black mothers are empowered to do the same. We go places that people don't typically consider for family travel, says Monet Hambrick, 35, of Miami. She is the creator of The Traveling Child, a social and digital platform that provides trip planning tips and educational destination spotlights. She and her husband, James, have two daughters, Jordan, 9, and Kennedy, 7, who've already trekked with their parents to places like Egypt and Brazil. The family is set to travel to Senegal and the Gambia this summer. We love to get out there and really experience culture, Hambrick continues. We went to Jordan last year for the girls' spring break and met with the Bedouin tribes. They taught us how to make bread in the ground. New York City native Jessica Rooks, 27, known on social media as Travel with Miko, can relate. She and her kids, Amaya, 7, and Cameron, 4, have traveled to 32 countries together. Rooks decided to pursue a life of globe-trotting after suffering from postpartum depression following the birth of her daughter in 2015. Motherhood came with so many changes, she recalls. Needing a break, she traveled solo to Costa Rica. I faced all of my fears on that trip, she says. I went ziplining by myself, and I am terrified of heights. I tried scuba diving, and now I'm an advanced certified scuba diver. Once she returned from Costa Rica, Rooks had an epiphany. Why can't I do this with my kids? She thought. After I took that trip, I was like, They are free until they're two. So let me see how many places we can go to, she says. And after that, we just kind of got the travel bug. Some tried to convince Rooks that seeing the world with little ones would be too difficult. A lot of people would tell me, oh, your life is over after you have kids, she says. I was just like, no, why do I have to put myself in a box? Yes, I am a mother, but I live by the motto, motherhood without limits. Hamburg states that journeying with her children has unlocked a whole new world for all family members. I love what travel has taught us and the way we have connected with people through it, she says. Being able to get out there and not having any limitations has really provided amazing experiences for us all. The next article is titled Sugar Rush. Essence staffers share which celebs they would add to this mouth-watering assortment. I would like to nominate Kofi Cerebo, Diamond Wiley Executive Assistant to the CMO. Did y'all see Creed 3? Michael B. Jordan for sure. Charlie Walker, Financial Analyst. Can you add Damson Idris for some bad boy energy? He's definitely got next. Annie Hudson, Sales Partnership Director. I'm going to shoot my shot with Shinquia Walls, just in case he sees this. Whitney Johnson, Sales Planner. I'd like to nominate LaRoyce Hawkins and Daniel Kalua. Tiffany Johnson, Digital Account Manager. Lakeith Stanfield would be a cool third quirky ad. Safira Martin, Sales Planner. I say Wesley Snipes. Norma Levy, Accounts Payable Manager. There's something about Tyler Lipley that gives me wild, wild thoughts. Yasmin Ramos, Supervising Video Producer. Let's show some love to Lorenz Tate. Shakora Biggs, Sales Coordinator. The next article is titled Presents for Parents. Gift the moms and dads doing parenting in their own special way with one-of-a-kind luxuries that match their style and flavor. There is no one-size-fits-all approach when it comes to gift-giving for the mothers and fathers in your life. While a tie here and some slippers there may have sufficed in the past, today's parentals are too hip for the humdrum. They are staying on top of everything from the newest tech releases to the latest sneaker drops. They deserve the best of the best for their next getaway to nurture their hidden hobbies and ultimately just to live their best life. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Essence. We hope you enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I am Ava Lewis, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Essence is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.